My name's Lex, I'm an addict. I'm so nervous. I don't know whether I'm going to cry and be sick or run away. But my sponsor's given me a pep talk and I've had a quick chat with the higher power. I can only share my truth with you and my experience before recovery, since I came into recovery and the strength and hope that recovery has given me. I found recovery after a 7-week stint in a psychiatric unit, and it wasn't the first time that I'd been in psychiatric care, it was the third time, and I'd had countless counsellors, psychiatrists, therapists since I was 17. And whilst I was there, I was trying to figure out why I kept having to go back to those places and why I wasn't better. And it was one day I just kind of woke up and looked in the mirror and my eyes were dead. Sorry, my voice is wavering, I'm so nervous. My eyes were dead and it kind of dawned on me that actually I had a drug problem and that's probably why I wasn't getting better. And it took a lot of courage to ask for help. It wasn't something that I was used to doing. It wasn't something that I was used to receiving, but I took a leap of faith and asked somebody there to help me, and I went to rehab for 5 weeks, and I was 5 years clean last Friday, and I can't believe it. I mean, the run-up to my 5 years was just incredible. It feels huge. It feels like a real milestone, and so many things have happened since I've been in recovery. My experience before recovery was I started using when I was about 11, started with the drink and the puff, and my using progressed really quickly to the point where I was suicidal at 17 and attempted to kill myself, and that didn't stop me using, I just carried on. Two marriages didn't stop me using. Having a child didn't stop me using. Nothing stopped me using. Nothing got in my way. And I was thinking about it today. I was thinking that the beginning of my using was loads of fun. I had a good time, you know, going out partying and doing loads of stuff that I shouldn't really have been doing. But I was having a good time. And then the fun kind of came with some problems. You know, problems were beginning to affect my life. I got expelled from school and was a great disappointment to my parents. And then the fun stopped and it just became a problem. And it was problems that I couldn't handle. And the more I couldn't handle it, the more I used. And the more I used, the more problems I got. So it was just kind of a vicious cycle of never-ending despair and using. And when I look back on it, I was in a really dark, depressing, deep hole for a lot of years. I used for 20 years, and probably five of those were all right. I did things in my using that I'm not proud of, but I've forgiven myself for them. And things that I wouldn't have done had I have not been using. But you know, I'm looking at this, we live to use and use to live. And that was exactly how it was for me. And I ended up in this psychiatric unit, diagnosed with bipolar, and I was psychotic, and I was put on some medication, and by that point I'd exhausted my illegal drug use. I couldn't use illegal drugs anymore, and I had found legal substances, over-the-counter medication, prescriptions from the doctor, and whilst I was there, it was like the dealer was right outside my door and I didn't really have to go anywhere. And I didn't have to pay. So it kind of suited me down to the ground, really. You know, drugs for free, and I didn't have to sell myself for that or give anything of myself for that. But this day when I woke up and I just looked in the mirror and I was dead behind the eyes. There was just nothing. And, you know, I was a mum of a 2.5-year-old and my marriage was falling apart. And I just had this realisation that if I didn't stop using, I was probably going to die. If not from the drugs, I'd have taken my own life. And it's a really, I found that a really sorry state to be in all over again. So I went into treatment, and this time 5 years ago, I was just finishing my detox. And it had been the week from hell. And I was really, really frightened. I didn't know how I was going to live without drugs. I didn't know how to live. I didn't know how to be me. I didn't know how to be a mum. I didn't know how to be a friend, a daughter. I just didn't know anything about life. Life had kind of passed me by in a bit of a haze. And that fear lasted the whole time I was in treatment. We were wrapped in this little cotton wool bubble. And it was all great whilst we were there. You know, they looked after us. We got 3 meals a day. You know, didn't really have to do too much. No responsibility. And when I came home, it was a really different life. The bubble burst really quickly. I remember on my first morning home, my daughter woke me up. She was very excited. She'd only been allowed to visit me once a week when I was in treatment, and they wouldn't let her visit when I was in the psychiatric unit because of the things that I'd done to myself, self-harm-wise. And she wasn't allowed to see me. And she woke me up, and it was kind of like I looked at her and just thought, my God, who are you? Where did you come from? And what am I supposed to do with you? You know, things like what she liked to eat, I didn't know. Her dad had taken care of her for 2.5 years. And it was just like starting again with a newborn. Except this one walked and talked and scared the living daylights out of me. She still does. My ex-husband was living in my front room, and I was living in the bedroom. And I kind of thought in treatment, I probably won't go to any meetings, I'll be all right. And I live outside of London, so I thought, well, it'll be okay. Nobody will bump into me. Nobody will knock on the door, it'll be all right. But I came home to such a tense situation and full of drama and, just full of drama, going through this really horrible divorce. We both used to leave the house at the same time to meet in court in different cars. It was just nuts. And I had nothing better to do, to be honest. You know, I just had nothing better to do. So I used to get in the car and drive into London and come to meetings. And they took us to meetings in treatment. And I found it really difficult to relate to people. I wasn't very good socially. I was not used to talking about myself or the way I felt because I didn't know how I felt. It's taken me a long time to realise how I feel and be able to identify it. I didn't like it. I didn't like the word addict, and I didn't like my name in front of that word. It scared me, you know. My mum had drilled into me that an addict was somebody who was on the streets, in the gutter, with a needle hanging out their arm. And that wasn't me. And the realisation that I was an addict, it really frightened me. I didn't know where I was going to go with it. I didn't know how I was going to recover from this disease. But I kept going to meetings, and some of them were a 2-hour drive, and I just did it. And eventually, I started to hear similarities and not differences. I started to realise that it wasn't about what I used. It was about my behaviour, my thinking. And I realised that actually I was the problem. And I got a sponsor. She was really lovely. But we just kind of had fun together and went clubbing, which probably wasn't very good at 6 months clean. You know, that's not her fault, you know. It was just where she was at the time. But I found myself quite close to using. So I pulled away from her and got another sponsor. And I don't know, the connection just wasn't there. Everyone says, you know, look for something in them that you want. You know, they've got something that you want. And I didn't know what I wanted. I didn't really know who I was, so I definitely didn't know what I wanted. And, you know, we worked the steps, and to be honest, it was really academic, kind of filling out questions and columns and stuff. And it was kind of like I was at school again, and I felt that I had to do it all correctly and the answers needed to be right. And I didn't know how to apply the 12 steps into my life. And I ended up about 18 months ago or so, about 2 years ago actually, without a sponsor. And I decided for a little while that I was going to sponsor myself, because I thought I knew it all by then. It was 3 years clean. And I just thought, yeah, I can do this. I've got it licked. How difficult can this thing be? And I was all right for a little while. And, you know, once again, I kind of thought, well, you don't really need to go to meetings. Who's going to knock on your door? Nobody's going to travel 45 minutes to knock on your door and see if you're all right. You can ignore the phone, ignore Facebook, and just kind of disappear off. And, you know, the fellowship will forget about you. And that lasted a couple of months, and then I sort of thought, you know what, I think I might need a sponsor. I was beginning to feel that I couldn't cope with life, and I knew that this program would enable me to cope with my life without using. So I started looking for a sponsor, and it was so difficult. There are so few women in NA, and you know, so few with something that I really wanted. Because by now I knew that I wanted someone who had peace of mind, who had a life, and who knew how to work these steps in their life and enrich their lives with them, not just kind of give it lip service and write a load of answers down. And by the time I found my sponsor, I was kind of like a hair's width away from using. I was on my way to meetings, and almost like blackout, would just find myself in off licenses, kind of standing there and almost like coming to and kind of going, what are you doing? Get out of here. And that was on the way to a meeting, and that scared the living daylights out of me, because I don't want to go back to where I came from. You know, I'd gained nothing materially. In fact, I've lost more stuff materially since I've been in recovery than I ever did in my using. But I knew that I didn't want to go back to that dark, desperate place where there was no way out for me other than death. You know, I'd started to build a relationship with my little girl, and I knew she needed me, and I knew I needed recovery to enable her to have me present mentally and physically, emotionally and spiritually. And I asked this lady to be my sponsor, and my life in the last 18 months has changed beyond all recognition. I found the person who had what I wanted, and she gave it to me freely. And there's no, you know, gratitude is a word that's kind of bandied about in these rooms, and you know, it is really important to have gratitude, but it goes beyond gratitude for me. There's no real description of how much I can thank this person. You know, life was falling apart around me, and I was ready to fall off this wagon. And it sounds really cool, she saved me. And we started working the steps, a completely different way to how I'd worked the steps before. And today I'm able to apply them to my life. You know, powerlessness and unmanageability. You know, powerlessness was described to me, you know, about people, places and things, not just drugs and, for me, self-harm and food and a multitude of other things. But unmanageability was told to me that, you know, it makes my feelings unmanageable. And I don't cope very well when my feelings are unmanageable. I want to revert back to what I know worked for a long time, which is numbing them with any substance. You know, and I already had a concept of a power greater than myself, and I knew that insanity, for me, was repeating the same mistakes and expecting different results, or kind of doing the same thing and thinking it was definitely going to be different this time. I'd seen that in my using, and the results were always the same. They never changed. But she's taught me how to take that into recovery and to see that no matter what I do, it's insane to think that some things will change. Like people, I can't change anyone. The only person I can change is myself. You know, and the decision to turn my will and my life over was really easy, to be honest, by this point. I was so frightened of using that if she'd have said, lick the pavement 10 times a day and it will keep you clean, I'd have done that. You know, and turning my will over, you know, it's so freeing to be able to, you know, first of all, find out what you're powerless over, how it makes you unmanageable, what the insanity is, and then I know what I need to turn over. You know, it's not just lip service, oh yeah, I'll give it to you, blah, blah, blah. You know, for me, it's working steps 1 and 2 before I can work my 3. And it's powerful. And it's comforting. And it works. And we got to step 4, and my experience of step 4 previously was that it was really painful. It was completely beat yourself up, you're a really rubbish person. All the messages that I heard when I was a kid, you're no good, you know, you're not worth anything, it's all your fault. All of those negative messages were dispelled by her and working this step 4. It was so loving and so gentle and so freeing. And I did it really thoroughly. I was really honest. And that was probably the first time that I really made a conscious effort to be honest with someone else about my past and my part in things and how those things made me feel and my reactions after the feeling and how that impacted on other people. And we read it together, and for me it was a beautiful experience. Mm-hmm. And Yeah, I just went away feeling so much lighter, so much better. But the thing that had come out of it was, you know, thankfully somebody's put the steps in front of me. you know, defects of character. I thought I was defective my whole life. You know, I was never good enough. Everything I did was wrong. And, you know, defects of character, and another thing that I could beat myself up with. But I'm not defective. I have behaviours that hurt myself and other people that I don't need to act on. And the other thing that I had got from my step 4 and 5 was a list of character assets. Things that actually are good about myself. Things that prior to that I hadn't been able to see in myself. You know, I can be really selfish, self-centred, egotistical, you know, full of pride and all the other kind of negative behaviours that damage me. But I'm also kind and caring and giving and loving and accepting, and have become, most of the time, non-judgmental. You know, no one's perfect. you know, and I, as much as I work steps 1, 2, and 3, I also work steps 6 and 7 because I can recognise those destructive behaviours and those destructive feelings, and I can turn those over to the God of my understanding however many times I like. It doesn't have to just be for me. It didn't just have to be when I was working my step 7. You know, it's a continual process for me. And, sorry, I'm timing myself just to see, ooh, 20 minutes, I'm doing so well. I'm still talking, and I haven't been sick. You know, and step 8, you know, listing the people that I'd harmed, that was quite sad, actually. And that was quite difficult to write, because now I had some insight into myself and how my behaviour affected other people and their feelings. And it was quite sad to write that list. But again, a bit like step 4, it was also loving and caring and gentle. You know, I wasn't pushed into doing anything in step 9 that either I wasn't comfortable with or would hurt the other person. And previously, I'll give you an example. I'd worked steps 8 and 9 with a previous sponsor, and I wanted to make amends to a boyfriend who died. And I didn't know where he... I'd found out one night in a club when I was off my face that he died. And when I wrote it down on my step 8, quite kind of egotistically, because he committed suicide and I thought it was all about me. He probably did it because I dumped him. My then sponsor told me to find out, go and find the death certificate and research where he was buried, and if not, get in touch with the family and find out, and then go to the grave. Which, you know, I hadn't seen him probably for about, oh God, 15, 17 years. And to just crash back into their life and bring all of that back up for them, you know, would have harmed them and hurt them. And this time when I worked my step 9, a lot of my amends were indirect, because that was the way they were supposed to be. You know, you're not supposed to go around just saying, oh yeah, I'm really sorry. You know, for me, indirect amends, especially to my family, is about changing my behaviour and my actions around them. Trying to be more loving and caring and tolerant, and being there as a person that isn't just going to go off and do whatever they want to do and be unavailable. I am available today. You know, I've had quite a few deaths since I've been in recovery, and I've been there for my family rather than been in the toilet or on my sofa. I've actually been able to be there and care for them when they needed it. selflessly. I wasn't expecting anything back. And they're the best amends that I can make to my family. Some of my financial amends, I couldn't meet the cost. You know, I just could not do it financially. So we found other ways to do things, give to charity, you know, and just other ways of doing stuff. You know, because it's not about, you know, breaking my bank and putting me in a situation where I can't feed myself or my daughter. It's about doing the best I can to make an amend for my wrong. You know, and step 10, well, I can do that about 15 times a day if I need to. And again, it for me, it's been about practicing it. It's been about looking at my behaviour, how it's affected the other person, looking at my part in it, and correcting that behaviour. It doesn't always need for me to say sorry. For me, I can just not do it again. You know, it doesn't need to be a drama. We don't need to go into a whole, oh, I'm so sorry, and tears and, you know, arguments and all that kind of stuff. I can just not do it to that person again, and not do it to anyone else again, or myself. And that's a kind and loving thing to do. Prayer and meditation was explained to me as quiet reflection. I don't sit cross-legged on the floor. I don't pray on my knees. Although that's some people's thing, it's just not mine. I spent long enough on my knees. I'm not on my knees anymore. I'm standing upright as a real person. I don't need to beg for anything anymore. And I have a special place where I go, and I sit and I look at the scenery. Where I live, there's some beautiful lakes. So I sit on the bench and look out at the lakes, and I have quiet reflection time to reflect on what's going on for me. And, you know, work my steps 1, 2, and 3 if I need to. And think how best I can serve other people without trying to serve myself. And it's so peaceful there, and every day I walk away feeling lighter and more spiritual than I did when I got there. Because it's normally after the school run, which is quite stressful in the morning, to get a kid dressed and argue about brushing teeth. You know, and I did my step 12 last Friday on my 5 years with my sponsor. It was one of the most emotional things I've ever done. I don't think that I knew what a spiritual awakening was before I actually read this step with her. There were some lines in the... I'm not going to start quoting text because I'll get it all wrong anyway. I could read it, but I won't. You know, there was a certain line where my heart kind of turned over and I cried. And it was at that moment that I realised I'd had a spiritual awakening. My spirit was awoken and free from, you know, the disease of addiction, one day at a time. And it was so incredible to think that I've worked these amazing steps, and to think that I can do this every day, one day at a time. It's just such a... it's one of those indescribable things, I guess. You know, and trying to carry this message to addicts. In the last 8 months, I've got myself 2 sponsees. You know, wow. Somebody, or they, want what I've got to offer. Oh my goodness. Oh God. You know, and they're the most amazing, incredible people. And two people who I'm incredibly proud of. And they, it's not just what I can give to them, it's what they give back to me as well. It gives me a whole new understanding of these steps, an understanding of recovery, different viewpoint on life. You know, and one of them, you know, followed some suggestions I gave them. I've got suggestions. That's mental. you know, and they said to me, well, I'll just do whatever you tell me to do. You know, don't suggest, just tell me, because I can't stay clean. And they're 27 days clean today. And it's a miracle, an absolute miracle. And I'm so proud to be part of that miracle for them. Really. It's just so, it's mind, this stuff is mind-blowing. And it's only in the last 18 months that I've realised how mind-blowing this stuff is. It's so powerful. I don't have to go back to where I came from. One day at a time, if I work these 12 steps and do what I did yesterday, I have every chance of staying clean tomorrow. I don't want to be the person that I was. I want to be the person that I've become since I've come into recovery. I've learned to be a mum in recovery, and it was really hard, really hard. And I don't get it right all the time. In fact, she walks all over me most of the time. I'm so soft, it's ridiculous. But she is happy. And she knows that she's loved. And she's 7 now. She is at the age when I first started self-harming. And I look at her and just think, how desperate and dark must my life have been to make me want to do that at such a little age. She doesn't live the way that I lived. She's encouraged. She's told that, you know, she's great, and all of her achievements are highlighted to her. I don't tell her that she's not good enough. I never compare her to other children. I've broken that cycle of dysfunction with her. You know, not to say, oh, I suppose, you know, having a mum in recovery is not exactly the sort of thing that you get around the school, but she learned about drugs the other day. They were teaching them about Michael Jackson and how he died of prescription drugs. And she piped up to the deputy head, yes, but if you drink too much, become an alcoholic. And she's 7, and this woman looked at her and was like, how do you know that stuff? She was like, oh, you know, Mummy goes to meetings to talk about her feelings. And when she told me, I was like, okay, we don't talk about that at school. I think I'm a lunatic. But you know, she's encouraged to talk about her feelings. And it's only because I know now how to recognise my own that I'm able to recognise that she needs to talk about hers. And help her discover what her feelings are. This program to me is a multitude of things. You know, it is about working the steps. It is about coming to meetings. It is about connecting with other addicts, whether they're using or they're clean. It is about having a sponsor and a higher power. And 34 minutes left. You know, and for me, I can't pick and choose which one of those I decide to do each day. It's not a choice, you know. There's no multiple answer. you know, multiple questionnaire where I can just pick one. For me, I have to do all of those things every day, all day. And I don't feel like I live my life by this program that I have to really work hard at. I don't. It's become second nature to live like this. You know, it works if you work it. No one said you have to work really hard to get this. You just have to make a commitment to wanting it, that desire to stop using it. And you know, I still have a desire, and it's not to stop using, it's to stay stopped using. You know, I don't want to go back. Life is infinitely better. I've lost everything materially. What I've lost materially has doubled emotionally and spiritually and physically. You know, material stuff can't buy you this kind of thing. It just, you know, this is given to us freely. It was given to me freely by another recovering addict, and I'm now giving it freely to other recovering addicts. And I'd just like to say that, actually, not only am I proud of them, but I'm proud of myself too. And I don't say that egotistically. I'm just really proud of the achievements that I've accomplished in recovery, even being able to do this. I feel much calmer now. You know, my legs were shaking when I got here, but I've done it, and it's an achievement. And if I'd been using, I certainly wouldn't be in a Narcotics Anonymous meeting, but, you know, I wouldn't have been able to talk to one person, let alone a room full of people. Life using was really lonely, and my life in recovery is not lonely. Sometimes I'm lonely, but I'm never alone, and that's the difference for me. I was alone when I was using, and today I'm not alone. And even if it's just me, I have my higher power to keep me company and to shut my head up when it's telling me that I'm no good and I'm a waste of space and I know nothing. And I really hope that someone has got something from this. And thank you so much for asking me. It's been a real honour and, you know, something that I won't forget in a hurry. But, yeah, thank you very much.